start again. As I was saying, Michael Sinatova, everybody should let know. Many years ago, I was in high school, and the last day before Yom Kippur, everybody would go around the room and ask each other Mechila. It would be a ritual. Ay, Merchumi, 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 Merchumi. And it was something that made us feel good, because the halacha is that before Yom Kippur, everyone should eat everybody else, before the Shulchan Aruch, Tafei Shvav, and Arachayim. And so we felt very good. We were conforming with the Shulchan Aruch, and we now felt ready to enter the Yom Kippur. And I, at the time, I went through the motions as well, and fine, it did what it did. And yet, even then, it didn't sit so well with me. And I didn't exactly know what didn't feel right, but as I grew older and I thought about it, it was easy to see how artificial and contrived this whole process was. To begin with, we were all pretty much friends. We got along anyway. Not like really we did anything anybody else that was so bad that we had to ask Mechila. And to the extent that maybe there were some hard feelings, maybe someone did something that offended someone else, I don't think a perfunctory ayimokumi, ayimokumi, really did the trick. I mean, Mechila is about expressing genuine remorse and assuming responsibility for having done something wrong, and it doesn't really come across with the quick ayimokumi, and then when you say ayimokumi again, it doesn't really capture the sense of reconciliation. So, my question to you is, how much weight should be given to someone who mouths the words, I murder you, if inside you're still feeling hurt? Obviously, the halacha would intend for an exchange that's more heartfelt, which can allow for healing and reconciliation. Now, by way of introduction, the halachos of Mechila, bin Adam Lachavero, are very complex. You can't do justice to that, those halachos today. They're very nuanced. How do you ask Mechila? When do you ask Mechila? How do you grant Mechila? You always have to grant Mechila. The relationship between asking Mechila, extending Mechila. Now, those who are interested in some of the details, full disclosure, I just wrote a lengthy article on the topic in the Torah to Go. It just came out before Shoshana. It's also, I think, online. So, it obviously struck a chord. I have to tell you, since the article appeared, I received countless emails, as well as a text message from somebody I don't even know in Florida. and he wanted to tell me about a personal situation, which I spoke about at the Shoshana. I don't know exactly where it's coming from, but obviously, it's a sensitive topic, and people have a lot to say this morning. I'm sure someone came over to me. So, I invite anyone who would like to read the article and have feedback. I welcome feedback, we can certainly communicate in whatever way, and we can discuss further. But what I'd like to focus on today is one aspect of the topic that I did not exactly address in the article, a little bit in one of the footnotes. And that is the relationship between Mechila B'Lev and Mechila B'Peh. When one is asked to be mochel, is there any significance to verbalizing the Mechila to say I'm mochel you, or is it function of what you think in your heart? Does the mocha require you to say, I am mocha? What's the relationship between the chila of the lave and the chila of the pet? Now, the question is really twofold. On the cover page, they only gave you half of the actual title that should have actually had another sentence to it. It says, interpersonal mechila is saying, I forgive you, necessary. In other words, assuming you do forgive a person in your heart, assuming that the person understands that you forgive them, is it still necessary to verbalize it, to say, I forgive you, I merciful you? The other side of the equation is, suppose you don't really want to be merciful in your heart, you don't feel that you're reconciled with the person. You can't really let go emotionally, but you force yourself to say the magic words, I'm very clear. You want to be my COVID. You can't really, can't feel it inside. You say it. Maybe you say it because you're pressured. Maybe you say it because you wish you could feel it. Maybe you just said it. It's whatever. Does that matter? Does it have any weight? Does it carry weight? Does it count for something? Now, the answer to these questions is not simple. There are indications in both directions. For halacha l'maisa, I'm not passing for anybody. You want you know, discuss it with your local Orthodox rabbi and see what it says. What I'd like to do is explore the topic, become familiar with the issues, what's really at stake here. Let's look at the sources together, starting at the beginning. Famous four-word pasuk that we use, we quote this, Leil Yom Kippur, after Kol Nidre. Pasuk is in Parshas Shlach, Vayomer Hashem, Salachti Kidvarach. There seems to be an emphasis here on that Hashem said, I forgive you. Vayomer Hashem, Salachti Kidvarach. He spoke the words, Salachti. Further admired on Yom Kippur, we have many piyutim that we say. One of them, as you can see, I gave you a couple of stanzas from it. The whole, we'll keep coming back again and again in this piyut, is Hashem, say the magic word. Va'aneinu salachti. Every sentence, every stanza ends with salachti. Kol baro salachti. L'ma'an na'amo, because of his word, salachti. Just say the word. And mar mila l'mani. Say the word for my sake. Salachti. V'tipse, salachti. Vashiveni, salachti. V'toma, salachti. Time and time and time again, we're talking about after the Shavuot who not just forgive us, but say that I forgive you. So, obviously that gives us the idea that there's something to saying I forgive. There's something about the power of the word. I forgive you. Now that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So our question is, when it comes to the other Machaveir, what exactly is Mechila? Now, to frame the issue somewhat, the word Mechila is not just something that we use in Halacha in terms of Yom Kippur, in terms of Tshuva, the other Machaveir. It's also a monetary concept. If somebody owes money to somebody, and the person who's owed the money decides, I'll let it go. I surrender the credit. You don't have to pay me. It's also mechila, the concept. You don't owe me the money. I'm the question that we have to ask is, what's the relationship between mechila when it comes to having a title on somebody, when you have a gripe and you feel bad? That type of mechila is connected to the mechila, which is a monetary mechila, when I am releasing you from the monetary claim that I have on you. Or it's just an entirely different issue. To the extent that we compare mechila in terms of relationships and emotions to the mechila of releasing a monetary claim, you don't have to pay me the money, then perhaps the significance to the fact that I articulate, you're free of that, I have nothing over you. To the extent that we're talking about a different dynamic, we're talking about emotional reconciliation, then perhaps it's not about the word, it's about the emotions. Do we feel at peace with each other? Have we gotten past it? That's kind of how we have to think about this issue. Now, there are two Mishnayos in Shas that deal with the idea of asking a few when you've hurt somebody. One is in Baba Kama, we see in source number 3. The other is in Yuma, the end of Yuma, source number 5. It's interesting how the Mishnah words the idea of Mechila in those two places. In number 3, source number 3, Baba Kama Tzadibes, the Mishnah says, Apo Pisho no singo, even if you're paying the monetary restitution that you have to pay for the harm that you inflicted on the person, Einim chalo, you're not forgiven, actually Yivakesh Mimenu. The focus is on seeking something from the person, Yivakesh Mimenu. It doesn't say to appease the person. It says what you need to do is seek out something. What is it that you need to seek out? You have to seek out Mechila. And the pasuk that we use is what we find with Avraham Avinu and Avinelech, and I learned on that in the article that I published in Torah to go. But the focus is Einim Chalas Yivakesh Mimenu. If you look in the Arz Ruah, source 4, and the way he quotes the Mishnah is Ach Yivakesh Mimenu Mechila. I'm asking Mechila, I'm asking forgiveness. And you can get that forgiveness. In the Mishnah Yuma, on the other hand, the focus is not on the getting mechila, but on the ritzui, on the idea of appeasing the person. Averos between man and their fellow man, Yom Kippur cannot forgive, ad sheyiratzeh chavero, until you appease your friend. if you look at the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, he combines both points together. The Rambam says Tshuva and Yom Kippur can forgive from in other Mabakum sins, and he gives you examples of that. However, Beinadam Lachavero sins, and he gives you a couple examples of that. And Nimchalo La'olam Ad Shikil Chaver Mashu Chayit Lo, to you pay the person what you owe, V'yirat Sein, and you appease the person. That's working off of the Mishnah Yuma. The Ram continues and says, even if you give the money, Sarech L'ratzoso, V'lisho Mimenu Shiyimcholo. And you have to ask the person to forgive you. Even if it's just words that you said that slighted the person, Sarech L'faiso, then appeasing the person, V'lifgabo Ashiyimcholo. The Rambam does bring in the idea of mechilah, and doesn't tell me that he has to say I'm okay, but there's something more than just the appeasing. There's something about getting a mechilah from the person. You have to again think about what that means. This issue becomes very relevant in light of the practice that we're familiar with, that appears in the Siddur every night before you go to sleep, before you say Kriya Shema L'Amidah. Those who are familiar with the paragraph that appears in the Siddur, Ibonu Shalom, Habeni Mochel, Uchom Bishihichis, Behikir Osi, I am forgiving anyone who may have slighted me, offended me, whatever way. This is a Gemara in Megillah, but one of the Amoraim who did this, and it became part of our practice, part of our liturgy. So the Gemara in Megillah, you have the source number 7, Marzutra, before he went to bed, he said in Aramaic, Sharile l'chol man mitzara, I forgive anyone who aggravated me. So the question is asked of Rabbi Tzion Abba Shaul, you can see here in the, should be in the sources, source number 9. The question was asked, Misha Yesh Belibo Tina Okas Al Adam Sim Shahiro. Somebody is very angry at somebody else. May he or may she say the Nusach of Kriya Shema Shalamita with the words Hareini Mochel Nisalech. May he say, I mean, it's not honest, right? You really don't feel like you forgive. Then the Sefer Seder Hayom was published, it's the time of the Arizal, source 8, and he mentions this practice. He writes, Yimcho lehem mechila gemura, mireivu minefesh mechila achlet. In other words, an absolute mechila. It's genuine, it's not just words, you mean it. So when Bettina Bishol responds, you can't say it. Ein lomar, harini mocha besalea, imadai yeshu tina ala besalea. If you don't feel it, skip. Don't say it. It means nothing. This is definitely the position of many of the Balei Musa. One of the famous Balei Musa of our generation is Magoldi, of Shlomo Goldi in Eretz Yisrael, wrote a sefer for Balei Shur as well as other Sfarim. In volume 2 of Balei Shur, you don't have it in front of you, but I'll read you a few sentences where he had a vibe of people he was talking to about issues relating to Heda and things that you might feel upset about with you and somebody else. He says, to be mocha is not an easy matter. Mi shalo akar milipo l'gami sakpeda. Someone who doesn't, has not uprooted that feeling of negativity, of hostility. Asur lo lo ma'abite mochla mochla. It's forbidden to say it. You're forgiven. It's the name of Zaks. You're misreading the person. You don't mean it. You don't feel it. In mishu nivakish nachila be'ergo mekipurin. U'mochem lo b'te ach lo b'leif. Some kid or something, you ask him mechila, and you just say, I'm not for you, but you don't mean it. Go shimlo es kaparsi makipurim shilo. You're stealing his kaparsi and kipper. He doesn't get kapar because he really didn't forget. But you need to have real mechila in order to be forgiven by Hashem. And he goes on. He says, you can't play it out with mechila. He brings you a story here about Eli Rakyan, one of the famous mashgichim in Eretz Yisrael. Somebody came before him and asked Mechila because he spoke Lashon Hara, whatever it was, he spoke badly about him. But Eliyahu Pian said, tell me exactly what you said. I want to know what you're asking. Not simple. And he heard what he said. And he said, look, it's not easy for me. I don't know if I can be mocha you. Come back in 2 weeks. And then, between now and then, I'll do all I can. I'll learn a lot of Musar. Maybe then I'll be able to mow for you, Malay Shalem. So the person was shaking. He thought it was so simple, right?
ask such a person from the Hila, so I didn't get it, right? So anyway, he couldn't imagine that he's such a difficult thing. He had 2 weeks, he's probably trembling and shivering, right? He comes back 2 weeks later, and then Rav Ali Avyan receives him the simcha, and he tells him, Baruch Hashem, I learned a lot of Musar in the past 2 weeks, and I was able to work on myself to forgive you, Leif Shalim, and I mochu you Ilad Murah. Says Rav Ali, this is a story to illustrate that true mechila avodahi. It takes a lot of effort and work. You can't just be mochu with peh verbally until you really uproot that feeling inside of negativity toward the person. That's what he feels is necessary. Okay, so this is an extreme position, but it's out there. And basically that means that mechila, without feeling it, doesn't have any value. I have another side to this. Go back to your sheets. The story that we're all familiar with, Parshas Vayesha, Vikeis, Vayigash, Vayechi. The story really is a story about the Nata Machabera, Yosef and the brothers. Yosef's brothers hate him, hard to understand exactly the underlying dynamics, but clearly the tragic situation where the family was ripped apart. Yosef was sold as a young 17-year-old, as a slave from Mitzrayim, and all these years he separated from his father, 22 years, father is mourning, the brothers, the family was not the same. And then, of course, we know the story and how it ended seemingly very happily, where Yosef rises to power in Mitzrayim, the brothers come down, Yaakov comes down, they discover Yosef is alive, and everything seems to be fine, and what's happening ever after, except that it goes to Mitzrayim, of course, but in terms of the family politics, everything was solved and reconciled. Not as simple as it seems. You have a quote here from Abeinu L'Chayim, source 11. It says in Torah at the end of Parshas Vayechi, after Yaakov dies, the brothers were afraid that Yosef might, now that Yaakov isn't alive, the brothers were afraid that Yaakov could take, that Yosef could get revenge against them for all they had done that many years ago. And so they send a message to Yosef, and they make up a story that Yaakov instructed Yosef to forgive them. Yosef cries, Chassid Shalom, how could I do that? It was all Hashem, everything came from Hashem. He orchestrated everything. It was meant for good. Look at what happened as a result. I sustained you, and so on and so forth. Beautiful words. But what's missing in the story is for Yosef to actually say to the brothers, I forgive you. So, Rabbeinu Bachai says something very chilling, and it has a lot to do with our Yom Kippur Master. You know, in our Yom Kippur Master in Musa, we have a piyut with Ela Eskirah, which talks about the Asar Harugei Malchus, the 10 Hanoyim over generations who were killed under the Roman persecutions. And this Zera, that was, as we indicated in the piyut, was a Zera and Hashayim that this should happen, had to do with the chait of Mechilas Yosef. There were 10 brothers involved in selling Yosef. Rabbeinu Bachai, on the Rishonim, he says, why is there a connection between Asar Harugei Malchus and chait Mechilas Yosef? After all, everything worked out in the end. And he tells us because, although the brothers asked Mechila, the pasuk doesn't actually tell us that Yosef was mocha. And we all know that without mechila, the tshuva doesn't work. In other amakom, Hashem cannot forgive if the other person hasn't forgiven.
Really,
and even though the pasuk says "Vayinakim al sabayidaber aliba," Yosef consoled them, he spoke nicely. Sheniravazeh shehayulam ritzu in Yosef. It sounds like there was some reconciliation. Nevertheless, mikol makom lo ra'inu. We don't find the pasuk actually telling us explicitly that Yosef forgave. And therefore, they ended up dying without mechila, and because you can't have full kapara, so the way Hashem's din and cheshbon works in the world, these are great people, so the sin which was unforgiven remained stored in a heavenly account, only to come back to haunt their descendants many, many years later in the form of the Gzera of Asara Harugei Malchus. Very chilling idea. In the Piyut, we actually make some mention of the famous of Yosef. And according to the Bachai, that's because Yosef did not forgive. What does that mean?
what was missing in the case of Yosef? So one way to think about it, and this is how I believe that Eilich Steinman, who we'll hear about in the show, not too long ago, he wrote a sefer for the Yosef Shachar and Chumash. He takes Rabbi Bachaya to mean that Yosef, the hurt was still there. As much as he appeased, as much as he said, I forgive, it wasn't to the level that the hurt was completely removed from his heart. That's the idea of the Dalei Shur, of the Bodhi. You have to have complete removal of any aspect and any tint of hostility. And somehow, as he puts it, I actually have the language here in front of me. Hayakasha liyosef nimchol alaksar habados asulo. It's hard. As much as he recognized it was Yad Hashem and everything was good, but somehow there was something missing in his heart. That's one way to think about this issue. But as I alluded to, there's another perspective. Maybe the issue is not about the heart. Maybe it's about, or maybe not just the heart, maybe it's about the verbalization of Mechila. Maybe that's the issue that the Rebbe Bachai is talking about. What's missing is the articulation. And perhaps all that matters is the articulation, even if the heart is not quite there. Again, to give you an illustration of that position on the extreme other side, what matters is the words, not the heart. Rav Reuven Grzybowski, one of the great Rosh Yeshivas in Europe before the war, and also in America, son-in-law of Baruch Barrett, Shmuel, there's a Sefer Zikaron I happened to stumble on, and he has a short essay there. In the middle of that essay, he quotes in the name of one of the Baal Musar, of Simcha Zitzel Mikelem, and this is the sentence in Source 12, if you tell your friend, I forgive you, it doesn't bother me, that doesn't matter, you don't forgive in your heart. Because we call that, halachically, Dvarim Shebelev. Dvarim Shebelev means that what's in your heart is not relevant. What matters is what you said. You follow your words, you don't follow your heart. Now, why is this a difficult position? After all, we know the rule is clear. Dvarim Shebelev and Dvarim. Someone does a transaction with somebody else, and everything is spoken out, and then the person comes back, the seller says, well, I only meant to sell it to you because I had a certain thought in my mind that I was going to need the money for some reason, and so on, and the deal fell through, and so I really didn't want to sell you. All right, sale is a sale, the sale is valid. You can't, you know, read the person's mind. If it wasn't stipulated, then the transaction is valid. So why is that a good example here? Dvarim Shebelev, I said I'm openly. And the answer seems to be because Dvarim Shebelev means when there's a transaction that has some halakhic consequence in terms of its effect. I'm selling you something. The item's being transferred from me to you. What matters is what we stipulated, what was verbalized, and not what I'm thinking about. But when the entire issue rests on what a person is thinking, then you can't take Dvarim Shebelev. The whole point is what you're thinking. I'll give you an example. The Kibbe Eger in Shuva, source 13, discusses what we know before Pesach, the concept called Bitul Chametz. So what is Bitul Chametz? Kol Chamira Chamira, we say in Aramaic, or to say it in English, any Chametz that might be in my possession should be nullified like dust of the earth. Is it about the fact that I said those magic words, Kol Chamira, any leaven, or is it the fact that in my mind I'm nullifying the Chametz? Obviously, it's the idea of bitul is to feel that the chametz is nullified. So the Ran tells us, why do we also do bedigas chametz in addition to bitul chametz? Why do we also search for chametz? Because you never know if the bitul was done the leif shalom. Maybe you're saying the words, maybe you're not really feeling it. The question is asked, so what? But you said, right? Ram Shabbalev in Bar, but that's different over here, because the whole point of bitul is what you're thinking, what you're feeling. So you're just expressing what's in your heart. If you're not feeling it, then there's something deficient in the act of bitul itself. You can't resort to Ram Shabbalev in Bar if the whole point is a function of the heart. And therefore, one could argue that when it comes to Mechila v'Yad Machadero, it's not about a transaction, it's about feeling a peace. Rav Reuven Grzybowski himself acknowledges that point, but apparently, what does he understand? Mechila v'Yad Machadero is not like, you might say, something which is about the heart, it's about letting go of a claim. Because he himself continues, he says, in his context there has to do with the issue of Kabbalah Lashon Hara, but he says in source 14, Yira Lechalik, the Avas Hashem Yira, so when it comes to fearing Hashem and loving Hashem, and things which are kobos halavavos, obligations of the heart, and things like that, lo yohil, it will not help you, mashi patu b'fiyam u'sham yichazulo, pasuk in Tehillim, the fact that you're saying one thing and thinking something else. The fact that you said it is irrelevant, because you're not really feeling it. Hachiloku, the rak machshava sh'osa chalos, kashrus, ochiv of tur, a machshava that creates some effect, some halakhic consequence, in whatever direction. Or, and here he gives you his thinking on mechila, mechilas tarumos. When I mochel someone, what does that mean? It means that there's some claim. The claim is, I have a right to be accepted. Does it have a monetary component? Maybe not. But I have a right to be accepted. When I mochel you, I'm releasing you of that claim that I have to be accepted. Tarumos is an expression in the Mishnah several times. Ain't no love el tarumus. You can't claim monetarily, but you have a right to be upset. So when you're mochel with pet, what you're doing is you're saying, I don't have that over you anymore. And that's what he says. Right? So Solander compared mechilas tarumus to mechilas mama. And bazeh, in this case, shayach, you can talk about dvarim shebalei ein advar. But chobas halavavos, it rather has to do with being a person who loves, who's fearing, who trusts. You can't say, I believe, and therefore you are mine. You are mine in Hashem because you feel that Hashem is one and he created the world, not because you say it. You might reinforce what you think, but if you don't feel it, if you feel Chas V'Shalom the opposite, the saying is not going to do anything. But when it comes to Mechila, he says that's like an action letting go of something. I think I would have a monetary claim, and now I have taromos over you, but I don't have it anymore. I tell you, I'm both with you. So this is, I think, the other extreme, the other perspective, that mechila is about verbalization. Another indication of this, we have in source number 15. Rav Sternbach in Eretz Yisrael quotes a story that happened with the Steiger. The story had to do with a situation where the Steiger did something to offend a child under Bar Mitzvah. Now, in a certain way, this is when you aggravate a child, when you aggravate a child, it's worse than when you aggravate someone who's Bar Mitzvah, because someone who's Bar Mitzvah can be mochel. Because the gadol has the das, halakhically, the intelligence to be able to affect a transaction, it can be mochel mamon. And so too when it comes to gripes and issues where you hurt their feelings. But someone who's not able to do that, so he tells you the Steiger had a situation where he aggravated a child, and the child was not even mitzvah. And so what happened was, he was still guilty about this for a number of years, until the child became bar mitzvah. The night the child became bar mitzvah, the Steiger rushed to the person, to the bar mitzvah boy, maybe it was his first mitzvah to perform at the bar mitzvah, mochel, and he asked for his mechila. What do we see? That if the child is reconciled as a child, what does it matter if he's bar mitzvah or not? There's no longer any problem, right? Everything is solved. No, there has to be some formal letting go of the quote-unquote claim, the taromes, which requires a bar mitzvah boy to be able to do it, and not someone under bar mitzvah. Another indication that mechila is not just about feeling good, making up, but there has to be something additional. Maybe verbalization, maybe something short of that, but something more than just feeling good is a tshuva of Rashi, source number 16. The story had to do with two people who have an altercation, physical altercation. They were fighting with each other, apparently, maybe physical, maybe arguments. But it was bitter. It led to physical. Bihiko after the sabero. So never one Jew hit another Jew. After some time, the person fell dead, and he asked for mechila. But this person is still angry. The victim, one was hit. So he impulsively took an oath, shvua, never to forgive. Now, after some time, he calmed down, and he wants to forgive. But the question is, do you need to do a Taras Hadar on a Dalit? What's the issue? Because if you take a neder against the Torah, then the neder doesn't take effect. So then it doesn't take effect. There's no need for Taras Hadar. But if it's not considered to be explicitly against the Torah, then it does take effect, and then you need to do a Taras Hadar. So Shali Didi, the question my friend asked was, in my Nishba Zeh, this person took the oath, it's called Nishba Levatos HaMitzvah because of the lack of Torah of Lo Sikom Lo Sikros B'nei Anacha, in which case it would not take effect because it's going against the Torah demands that you forgive. Anyway, without getting that, to that aspect of the question, because he says at the end, Heshem She'eng Ledunom Mishum Shvor Levatos HaMitzvah, Lo Sikar does not have to mean that you forgive. This is why it starts in the article, the relation between Lo Sitar and Mahila. But then Rashi says, therefore, it is seemingly a neder that has to be an oath. So what about giving him a hug? Kissing? Is that allowed? So long as the neder is still in effect, can you hug him? Can you kiss him? And he says, there's no greater Mahila. That's what he went, hug him, you kiss him. And he gives examples from Tanakh with the story about Shalom, that when you hug him, you kiss, that's that not the Mechila. But now I ask the father. So, according to Rashi, Mechila can also be through hugging and through kissing. Okay, maybe that's equivalent to words, maybe it's good enough. But before we got to that point, what's the person asking? What was the question? I feel bad about having made that shua. I'm ready to make up. So it wasn't mocha. By definition, if he was mocha, he was ready to the extent that the neder is still in effect, he was very violation of the neder. I mean, the same Rashi says to hug and to kiss is mechila. Where were we before he had to kiss? He wanted to know. I want to forgive. You fixed, you forgave it. It's done. You're ready? Over the line. What do I see in Rashi? The fact that I've made up, that's not mechila. Mechila is something more than that. What is that more? Maybe it's verbalization, maybe it's some active, demonstrative expression of that. Rashi seems to say hugging and kissing, but it's not just the fact that everything's okay. It has to be more than just everything's okay. It has to be something on top of that, which is a formality, a closure, an expression of some kind, which indicates that the issue is closed. So again, that shows us that mechila is not just the fact that everything's good between us, but there has to be some clear sense of that. That not just the fact that I know that he's okay now, but he has to actually release me from something, and that is what the question came up here, Rashi, whether he's allowed to do that before doing a Taras Nadar. Another indication of this, again, that mechila is more than just the fact that everything is good. The Ramah brings in Shulchan Aruch, and I mentioned this in the article, and one of the cases where you don't have to be mocha if you're asked is you're intending for the good of that person who's asking mechila. Generally, the mochel is still 17. Rama says that the person who's asked to be mochel should not be inflexible unless he's machabi with tovas and vakish mechila for the sake of the one who's asking. So the Shigur explains that the person is a repeat offender and is not really feeling it so much, so therefore he's going to come again. He wanted to get a message, so you say, I'm not mochel. However, even though you're not mochel for the reason that we have, that the person should really become more genuine, nearer the melibo tzarchol haster hasina mimenu. You should still remove the hatred from your heart because he has mechila. What does that mean? You don't hate him anymore, but you have a right not to be mochel. Isn't that the same? If you remove the sinna, doesn't that equate with mechila? Apparently not. Apparently, removing the hatred is one thing. Being mochel is something distinct and separate from that. And that's when you have a right to say, or indicate that I'm not mochel, but I've done something in terms of my own work to remove the hatred, but there's still a lack of mechila. Again, you see that mechila is something over and above that. In the Ritva, I don't know if I'm supposed to end already. I don't know if I'm holding anyone up. At least, you know, if you tell me that to end up at 5 minutes, I'll try. Okay, thank you. The Ritva in source 19 talks about the practice of the Amora, that is to say, I forgive before he went to bed, and the Rebbe wants to know, this is an obvious, otherwise you violate Lo Sitor. And how could he violate Derin Midrash? And the Rebbe says, in effect, that the two issues are not the same, even though you're not Derin Midrash, but you don't have to be Mocham Bechilat Shemayim until this Amora wanted to have this practice to be Mocham Bechilat Shemayim. Apparently there's this idea called Bechilat Shemayim, which is again a separate category. Coming back to the story of Yosef and the brothers, so we had one perspective before from Rabbi Leib Steinman. Yosef, based on Rabbi Bachai's comments, Yosef did not fully let go of his feelings of hurt. The other perspective is shared, I can't read it because of time constraints, Source 20, Source 21, Shut Chaim Biyad, and also Simcha Zitzel Brayda Rosh Hashiva Chevron in Source 20 and 21. They both say that the problem in Yosef's case was he completely let go of the hatred. He was appeased. It was all good. But he never said, "Bepeh Maleh, I am Mochel." And therefore, there was something missing in the closure, the fact that it wasn't verbalized. Look, obviously, Mechila is not a simple matter. I just got one of the emails I mentioned before that I got since the article appeared sorry to go with somebody, Rothstein sent me a tshuva of a Chaim David HaLevi, our base in Tel Aviv, who actually put Mechila perhaps in a more limited context than Rabobi would have had it. And he says that basically Mechila has to do with being able to move on in your life. So from that perspective, going forward, it's no longer on my radar screen. It doesn't mean that the curve is completely disappearing. So that makes it a little bit easier. So you can say, I'm mochel you, and you move on. Again, the Baal Musa would say, you got to do all you could to totally let go of everything. Obviously, to be mekayim the mitzvah, min hamuchar, to point to all the shittos, we would say, do all you could to feel it, and do all you could to make it clear and to indicate it, to verbalize it. Then I say, you're mochel, and you're mekayim this, mochel adeos. Short of that, you'll have to rely on one opinion or the other. But of course, we want the Kippur is the highest standards. Hashem should give us all the opportunity to ask Mechila, to gain Mechila, to grant Mechila, and to get Mark of Tinnitro.
Yes. What about the aspect of asking the person, asking the Mechila?
Not mine.